make it a mission to make a transition. Better decisions and lower emissions. Develop advanced energy systems. Enhanced transition, remote microgrids. Indigenous smart kids on smart grids. We are the future, we know what it is. We know our needs, the future, the kids. It's time to take over as owners in this. Coast to coast to coast. Coast to coast to coast.
Energy sovereignty,
sustainability,
and resilience
are central components to global climate action,
the protection of Mother Earth,
and the safeguarding of generations to come.
Hello, folks. My name is Freddie Upe Campbell. I was born and raised in the Kootenays in so-called British Columbia, Canada. I'm a Michif person and grateful to be here with all my relations today, calling in from the Mushka territories in so-called Bogota, Colombia, here supporting Global Kin and participating in our solidarity work, and that will flow into this episode as well. Hello, all my relations. My name is Daphne Kay from Kauzas First Nation, Treaty 4 Territory, Turtle Island. We're here together to bring you a special episode of today's podcast. As most of you know, as the world has been grappling with the war going on in Gaza, the occupation and the genocide of the Palestinian people, I know we've all been trying to deal with this in our own ways. I know many people have been protesting and standing up for human rights, and there's opportunities to support and help. And in today's episode, we'd like to bring an opportunity to do just that. One of our kin, Lauren Meller from so-called Australia, reached out to us and asked if we would be able to do a special episode on the podcast and feature a story from the We Are Not Numbers organization, who's doing a project called Repower Gaza. And so today you'll hear Wala Saba share more about the project and the work and its connection to directly supporting folks on the ground right now experiencing conflict and undergoing genocide.
Thanks very much to our global kin at Decolonizing Power for featuring this episode on the Repower Gaza project. I'm Laura Mellor, a community organizer, campaigner, and clean energy practitioner based in the Northern Territory of so-called Australia. I'm recording this from the lands of the Mangarai and Yuengmin, Indigenous traditional owners of so-called Australia, and our work centers around building energy independence through renewable energy and building the power of local communities to take control of their own energy futures and self-determine development on their own lands. When we were approached by people inside Gaza who had links to comrades working in liberation movements here in Australia, who were asking for direct support to restore power to displaced families inside Gaza. It was the end of 2023, not long after this latest round of attacks by the Israeli state on the Gaza Strip had started, and already we'd seen tens of thousands of people killed and displaced in those attacks. It was gut-wrenching watching those scenes of genocide unfolding on TV screens and on the internet every day. So we really welcomed that outreach from the crew at We Are Not Numbers, who are doing just incredible work in the face of this onslaught to bring the stories of the struggles of people inside Gaza and inside occupied Palestine to the world through story, poem, other forms of creative expression, all while this unfolds and while there is nowhere safe inside Gaza. So when that request came through for support from those of us working in the clean energy sector we jumped at the opportunity to help build this project, Repower Gaza.
Communication is important and stories are important. Stories are foundational for telling who we are and passing on knowledge to the next generations. And when atrocities occur, when genocide happens, it's important to remember our stories, remember our kin, and uphold those stories, uplift those voices, and ensure that these things are never allowed to happen again. The whole world's been watching, and it's been hard not knowing what's going to happen day by day, not knowing if our kin in those parts of the world are safe. And this opportunity to provide support is very important to ensure that those stories are actually heard. We know that there's a lot of media blackouts going on right now, and voices are being silenced to control the narrative. This is an opportunity to change that narrative, to switch the power dynamics, turn them on their heads, and bring those voices back to the forefront, and to put the power back into the people's hands so that we could support one another.
Before we play the interview today, we just wanted to provide listeners with a trigger warning. The deep and raw truths shared within these stories are traumatic, and we want to let our listeners know what to expect. And we hope that if you need to stop listening or seek support, that you're able to do that. We'll also put some support resources within our notes of this episode. Merci, folks, for supporting in the ways that you can. And yeah, we'll play the interview now.
Hello, my name is Wala Sabah. I work as the project manager for We Are Not Numbers in the Gaza Strip. I was born and raised in the Gaza Strip, currently based in the UK for the time being. I live here, but all my family are still in Gaza, and managing all the projects from the UK office here. The Repower Gaza project was started as an idea. So we were just chatting about the most urgent needs of the people in the Gaza Strip, especially those who are staying in tents at this moment. We were discussing with our mentors what is the best way to support those people. And then the idea of the solar panels, because no one has access to electricity at this moment, came up. After this, we discussed it with the writers, and because many people are just going for the food project, others are saying maybe electricity is not as important. And they were like, no, electricity is as important as food at this moment, because we walk for long distances to be able to charge our phones and connect to people and to the world outside with the basic internet they have at this moment. Overall, the situation is very dire. People are struggling. Our writers are struggling, and their families as well. We're trying to help them because we believe in the power of word, and we believe that telling a story is really important. And as far as you can see in the news, many journalists have been, over 200 journalists were killed in the Gaza Strip, and we're trying to keep going. We don't want to stop. We don't want the world to stop learning or knowing about what's going on in Gaza. And this is the very little that we can do to help and support them to be able to continue writing. So 100% of our writers are displaced, internally displaced from their houses. So we at this moment have 300 writers, and none of them are staying in their houses. Those who managed to stay have evacuated multiple times. It's a matter of going and returning to their houses. Only a couple of them that keep going and coming, but the majority of them are evacuated from their houses to the south of the Gaza Strip. And a lot of them are staying in tents in Al-Mawasi displacement camp in Khan Yunis, and also Al-Mawasi displacement camp in Rafah, and in Rafah city. So these are the three major places they're staying in. We have a couple of writers staying in the north of Gaza, Gaza city, and one of them is staying in the north so far. Those in Al-Mawasi displacement camp, either in Khan Yunis or Rafah, are staying all in tents because there are no houses in these regions or areas. It's a burning place. Al-Mawasi is a burning place, desert style, only sand. no access to any facilities, no hospitals, no houses around, no water, no sanitation facilities, nothing at all. Only tents and sand, that's it. And a sea in front of them. They have to go like around 17 or 16 kilometers to be able to charge their phones or to charge their laptops. From here, we decided that the first batch of the panels would go to the people who are staying in tents, so we can help them, support them, not to go all those distance. And it's going so far well. They're so happy, excited. Many of them were just shouting and screaming when they received the solar panels. At that moment, I realized how important the project was in the first place.
The Israeli state, as a Zionist and colonial project, has long weaponized the use of energy insecurity against occupied Palestinians as a tool of oppression. For the past many decades, electricity access inside the occupied Palestinian territories have been severely restricted by the Israeli state, with many Palestinians only able to access electricity for a few hours each day, severely limiting their ability to exercise any autonomy or access the necessary functions and features of a functional society. But since October, Israel's ongoing bombardment of Gaza has now destroyed over 70% of all infrastructure, including rooftop solar, of which there are many, many installations in an effort by Palestinians to overcome the electricity and fuel shortages. Power stations have been destroyed, fuel supplies have been cut at the border, and residents lack any basic access to food, water, or electricity.
So in the best case scenarios, even before October 7, in the best case scenarios, the electricity used to be 8 hours a day in Gaza. So then we realized it's important even to have the panel, even if the war ends, because people still need power inside their houses. 8 hours is not enough. That's the best case scenario. Sometimes it's six, sometimes it's four, depending on how much fuel gets into Gaza. So the solar panels wouldn't only support them at this stage, but would also support them once the war hopefully ends in the Gaza Strip. Many of the solar panels were completely destroyed during the war, and the hospitals didn't have them. They are saving lives. We need them. Israel is controlling the access of fuel to the Gaza Strip. And with those panels, we don't have to depend on the occupation authorities busing the fuel to the Gaza Strip. And that's why I believe the concept of decolonization of energy is a right fit, especially in the context of the Gaza Strip. It's emergency situation. One of our writers, she happened to be my sister, actually. Her name is Rawan. Rawan received one of those panels, and she's the only person who has medical background. She's a pharmacist. She's a student. But she's the only one who supports people who need medical aid support first aid support in their displacement camp. She was successfully able to help many, many people during the shooting, during evacuation, children, women who give birth, women undergoing C-section. She's amazing. She's doing a great job. I feel so proud of her. And she told me, well, I received many children who need nebulizer to be able to breathe. Recently, we're talking about 1 month old baby girl who needed a nebulizer. And then she said she had no chance before to charge with nebulizer, especially during the afternoon time. And after we provided this solar panel, she was able to charge it. And she's able to help not only this baby girl, but many of the children who need help in the place. So sometimes those solar panels are life-saving for people. We don't understand it unless we talk to the people on the ground and realize what stuff they're doing with it. She said that it's not only their tents that benefit from it, but all the people around. She said she charges up to 100 phones per day. So it's not only the people who get the solar panel who benefit from it, but also the people surrounding them. They don't want to walk. No one wants to walk that long distance to go to Rafah to charge their phones. It doesn't have to be medical to be life-saving. Also, writing is really important. Many writers weren't writing before. once we provided the solar panels, they started writing because now they have the chance to charge their laptops and share their stories with us. And hearing from first person is totally different from hearing in the news. What we're doing is humanizing the stories, listening directly from the experience of people, people writing about their daily personal life, how they struggle to cook, how they struggle to charge their phones, how they struggle to talk to their families. I had one of those people who received the panel, and he told me, voila, I had my family in the north. I didn't know if they were still alive or not. And after I had the panel, I charged my phone and I was able to connect to them. Unfortunately, he lost some members of his family, but still, at least now they can connect together. And we feel so proud of being able to help and realize how much important is this project for people. There's no safe place in Gaza, to be honest. There's no safe place. And we know that we work under emergency situation. We know that there's nothing guaranteed. And at any moment, anybody can die. Even those who are staying in tents. I received a call from one of our writers a couple of days ago. And she said, voila, we were in our tents and Alma was in Khan Yunis. And all of a sudden, we woke up to bullets all over us. The Israeli boats were shooting at fishermen. We understand and we accept that there are a risk. Our team on the ground accept there are a risk. We try to minimize it. So what we're trying to do is just to install all the panels in the same day so we don't have to go back and forth many times. This makes the risk less, but it doesn't stop it at all. We try our best to make it as secure as possible, but there again, there's no such safe place in Gaza. We would love people to share the stories. Many of our writers are going to write about their experience with the solar panel and how much they benefited from it. It will be great if they can share the stories and share the campaign itself, because we still haven't reached our target. We are 35K now, and we need more 15K to be able to achieve the 50 panels target. So it will be great if they can share the campaign with people, keep talking about our stories, about what we are doing. You know, we're working under emergency situations, so securing the panels wasn't easy at all for us. But with the help of locals staying there, with the help of some of our volunteers on the ground, we were able to secure the first 10 panels. Now we're working to secure the second batch, where we will be having 25 more panels. We wish to help as many people as we can. We know we're limited with funds, but we wish to reach our target. If more, we can help more people. I just want to say thank you so much for the interview today. Thank you so much for all the people listening. Whatever you can help with publishing our stories or our articles about the project, that would be great so it can reach a wider population. Those panels are so much needed at this moment. This project was amazingly done. We had great support from our friends in Singapore. I just want to say thank you so much. And thanks everyone else who donated for this project. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, listeners, for listening. It's very important to continue supporting each other, even if it's just to listen and bear witness to the atrocities, to the genocide going on, because as the reality shows, that the survivors and the people who don't survive might not be able to tell their stories. But it's through projects like these that people are able to have a voice and have their voice heard. We send our most heartfelt support to you as you continue on this endeavor, and we pray for all the families of Gaza, all the people affected by this worldwide. And we thank you, listeners, for continuing to be there and support and bear witness. We ask that you support if you can, and continue to support in whatever capacities you can, wherever you are in the world.
What we want listeners to understand about what's going on inside occupied Palestine and inside Gaza right now is that the cause of Palestinian liberation is deeply connected to all other Indigenous peoples' struggle for liberation, because the same powers that are committing genocide in Gaza right now are the same actors worldwide, the colonial states like the United States and Canada and Australia. These are the same actors that have, in varying degrees, attempted to commit genocide against their Indigenous populations. So the global movement in solidarity with Gaza right now is really a global movement for Indigenous liberation. And we are witnessing a very powerful moment in that history. So while the Repower Gaza project is restoring light and life to parts of Gaza that the Zionist entity Israel has attempted to wipe out, we really want to encourage all global kin, all listeners of this podcast, to find ways that they can join in and amplify this solidarity that's happening across the world in support of the Palestinian people. You can do that in a range of ways. One very clear and direct way is to continue to help us reach the target for Repower Gaza so that we can make sure that as many solar panel kits as can be deployed inside can get to people who need it and do some good on the ground there inside Gaza, despite the blockades and despite all of the restrictions the Israeli state is attempting to enforce there. But if you are in a country that has a colonial genocidal history like the United States, Canada, Australia, there are things that you can do that will have a really powerful impact that the international solidarity movement is building. There are things like the targeting of weapons manufacturers. There's the targeting of supply chains to make sure that weapons and other resources are withheld from the Israeli state to stop its violence. There is the powerful BDS movement to ensure that capital and resources don't go to supporting Israel. There are local protests happening daily and weekly around the world that people can get involved in. So we really encourage listeners to engage in the history of the Palestinian Liberation Cause, to understand the real root cause of Israel's colonial violence against the people of Palestine, to get involved really directly, and to share the stories in particular of fearless writers, people inside Gaza who are documenting the genocide right now. So get behind We Are Not Numbers, follow them on social media, help amplify those stories so that we start telling the truth about colonial violence and Zionist violence that's going on right now.
Kitchi Morsi Wala, for your words and your heart, and Lauren, for your solidarity and support, and for the listeners for joining us. We recognize that this is a somber episode comparatively to the other episodes we usually share. However, this is truth. This is real. This is happening now. And though we cannot imagine what folks are experiencing right now across the world, it is our responsibility to do what we can as a community to show care and love and support. And we're so much stronger together. And, you know, the decolonization of power, both politically, both in terms of energy, in terms of colonial power, this is all part of it. And many communities are facing different struggles of power in so many different ways. And genocide is most certainly one of those. So again, merci for listening to this episode and for doing what you can to make these calls to action within your communities, your spaces, outside of those communities and outside of those spaces. We're laying down prayers for our kin in Gaza, for our kin around the world, and we will keep doing so until accountability is upheld. Please go to the We Are Not Numbers website to hear more stories from writers on the ground, to hear actual stories of folks who are experiencing the conflict right now, and to provide support, whether that be through funding or the sharing of these stories and voices. Merci.
From the river to the seas, Palestine will be free.